think about the things in your marketing world that are forever changing, and then juxtapose that with what is unchanging so that you can get a very clean line of thought. Most human beings experience the world, and this is just the way that our brains work, in comparison to one another. Like, we compare elements. That's something we do instantaneously. It's part of our own human computer, right? Like, so everyone understands life in comparison to something else, right? Like, no comparison, no understanding, believe it or not. Therefore, I really like to think in this duality stage, because I think that it's useful for sharpening the marketing sword and being a better marketer, right? If you can start to think about like marketing techniques and even ask yourself that fundamental question, like, what is this hoping to achieve? Like, what's my goal here? What, like, I have a hypothesis, but what would the success case look like? Okay, great. And then I can even, you know, kind of like map that out in a way that I think could be really helpful.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang, man, we're going to get ready for a great discussion, you know, and it could definitely lead into another one, because we're going to talk about the art and science of lead generation with the CMO. And actually, he wears a couple hats. We're going to talk about that in a second. Of science, Eric Klockstrom. Eric, welcome.
Thanks, Jim. Pleasure to be here.
Okay, so now, before we get into this discussion, talking about the art and science, and who knows where this is going to go. Of course, we start within a lane, but you know, we're going to be expanding, because I'm looking forward to this discussion, because I've seen you talk about this particular topic quite a bit. And I took so many notes. I'm looking forward to see where this is going to go. But if you could tell the B2B DM gang just a little bit about yourself before we get going.
Yeah, sure. On a professional level, you can think of me as a lifelong marketer. I view marketing as a craft and something that I'll be practicing at pretty much throughout the rest of my life. It's what I've been doing. You know, CMO as a title or a role is kind of like my last six, if you will, companies. So I've been doing this for a while, maybe have a gray hair or two to show. That said, I love it. I think that it's, endlessly fascinating. There's never a dull moment in the marketing department, especially not over at science. And I really geek out on that kind of stuff. So, you know, for me, this is what I do, who I am. and it's a lot of fun.
Well, okay. So you talk about the journey that got you to where you are today. Now I would dare to say that all of those experiences and circumstances, like for many of us, have essentially got you to the point to where you are today. So if you reflect back,
yeah,
what were some of the key learnings that got you to where you are today in that journey?
Boy, this is a podcast in itself. And do you have a few hours? key learnings. I think one of the things that is interesting to me about marketing is the duality of the things that kind of like never change, that are basic and rooted in human psychology and tendency and the way the brain works. And the things that are frankly ever-changing by default, tactics, channels, ways in which we can reach customers or would-be clients, completely different, you know, marketing mix that I have here in 2023 than say decade and a half ago when I was working, you know, back then as the head of marketing for a company called Sitespeed, acquired by Logitech. And so fundamentally, like, almost not even the same profession in that regard. So a fundamental learning for me is that you have to kind of be grounded in foundational kind of concepts and really understanding things about what, maybe it's best to just say, what in marketing will never change? And then what is changing every single day in marketing that I need to pay attention to and that I need to, you know, kind of like take into account as I build campaigns, as I kind of like rotate strategy, as I make investments, as I embrace different go-to-market ideas and or channels. those are the kinds of things that I think are fun.
Well, and, you know, and as you were saying, you know, especially start talking about the science of behavior and, you know, the things that people say they do versus what they actually do.
Oh, yeah. Predictably irrational is the way that is phrased.
Yeah, most definitely. And also what we are learning more, you know, each and every day in regards to the brain and how it works. And I think that we're even opening up more doors in that realm.
Yes.
I think there's an interesting interview that's supposed to be coming up on one of the major networks with the CEO of Google talking about Bard and how that tool, if you just want to call it as such, has done things that they just can't explain.
Right. Like, yeah, I think that was on 60 Minutes.
That's correct. It's coming soon as we're recording this. Like, for example, they didn't teach it the Bangladesh language. But yet they asked it some type of question and then therefore it responded and basically learned it in seconds. And they can't explain how and why because it wasn't part of the initial programming. Now, talking about the whole black box scenario and Pandora's box and things like that, we don't know where it's going. However, I do think, of course, if it's applied correctly, it's going to expand our thinking in a lot of ways in regards to that whole science of human behavior that is really just has been untapped.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. In fact, I would even categorize it as in my working career, saw the advent of the commercial internet, saw the advent of like what I would call mobile, you know, and kind of like the mobile revolution, saw the advent of cloud computing and maybe even the creation of like the SaaS industry as a an archetype that fell out of that. And I think the AI kind of like move, if you will, is going to be bigger than all three of those combined.
Yeah, that's definitely what they're saying. So if you put that into the context of what we're talking about today, and you referenced and said there's some things that have just really should never changed, haven't changed, are critical to what we do. If we're talking about it in the context of, you know, the art and science of lead generation, what are some of the things that absolutely we need to continue and possibly even enhance?
Well, as luck would have it, we still don't have automated buying for the most part in any kind of B2B scenario whatsoever. And don't really see that on B2C either, unless you're talking about stocks and automated trading programs that are run to, you know, buy those on Wall Street. For the most part, that buying exercise is an exercise in psychology, in understanding things like positioning on the vendor side, you know, like it's creation of demand. And then it's really an understanding and encapsulation of need, right? So if you really think about a buying exercise, it's always a change management exercise. And that fundamentally won't change, you know? So like no change, no sale, simple, right? And so what produces that kind of like, let's focus on B2B because that's where I live all day long, set aside B2C for the moment. If you're thinking about like buying groups, if you're thinking about why does a company spend money on anything, product, service, solution, whatever, all of that emanates from people's need to solve a problem or to meet a goal or to mitigate risk. I mean, those three are pretty much the entirety of why anyone does anything, why exercise that change. And so attaching and understanding that as part of the buying cycle is arguably the big puzzle for every marketer to solve. With a lot of changing variables and a lot of like, again, channels changing for where you can start that journey with awareness or intersect conversations that may or may not already be happening or planting seeds, in other words, creating demand for that need to change.
Well, as you're talking, I had the opportunity to, interview Matt Dixon, who wrote the book, The
Jolt. Yeah.
And, you know, as you're talking and we refer to the playbook, you know, as we, you know, what we've been doing in regards to affect that change and the decision to change is we've always been addressing it from a status quo bias scenario and such in positioning. And what they're finding is that more deals are actually lost to no decision.
Mm-hmm.
So then a competitive decision.
Makes perfect sense.
Okay, so you say it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Now
the data, you know, to essentially And we could say that, hey, we have a confirmation bias because I believed it, you know, and it makes sense to me. But if we start looking at, you know, how do we help the sale to occur? If we're talking about the science of lead generation, how do I get from, you know, and look at that whole buyer journey scenario? How do I make sure both playbooks, as Matt talks about, we have the status quo bias playbook, and then we have the omission bias playbook. And the omission bias that he refers to in that whole no decision is that, hey, I need to feel confident moving forward that this is the right decision to make. And yes, of course, the whole transformation effort and issue goes along with it. But I don't want to mess up. It's all about the fear of messing up. I don't want to mess up by choosing you to do this or to offer or provide me this product or service.
Yeah, and I think that there's a, they go slightly into the center of the book, but my own take on it or spin is that I actually think, and I've held this thesis for a long time, that B2B buying is way more emotional than B2C buying, right? So if you think about it, like, where does anyone's professional reputation come from? Like buying, believe it or not, or determining kind of like the tools or the services or the partners or what like goes on in anyone's department that is usually attached to KPIs and some sort of outcomes is what ultimately you wear on your own professional brand. So why wouldn't it be very emotional when I go into a buying situation where I'm going to leverage a company's money to do X, Y, or Z and then be judged on essentially whether or not that actually happened?
You know, it's, I mean, when I hear you say that, it's a shocker because it's not said, you know,
right.
People don't think that way. They're like, you know, hey, well, that's business. It ain't personal. No, wait. Yeah. You know, the saying is business is personal because of that whole, you know, reputation element, perception, you know, success, you know, security going, you want to look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Totally.
I don't want to put my, you know, have my neck roll or things like that, you know, stick my butt out, you know, on a bad decision. And also too, if you start looking at the problems that need to be solved today, they're not simple anymore.
No, they're not. Yeah. And at the top of Maslow's hierarchy of needs is self-actualization. And, you know, it's so funny because like one of the things that is almost never talked about in any kind of B2B buying scenario is what the person who's leading the buying group or the champion, if you will, the main driver of any sale, again, that change management exercise, what they personally are going to pull out of doing something versus doing nothing, right? And then back, you're back to that omission bias or fear of messing up standpoint, which is like, I'm so glad the Jolt guys kind of like made a move in this direction and started, you know, kind of unearthing the data because I think there's reams of it about. And anyone that's listening to this has their own sales cycle or their own pulse on their company's sales cycle can start to map to exactly what's going on in that sales cycle when people are ghosting you. When all of a sudden a deal that seemed like it was hot and heavy and really good, like just kind of went stone cold silent. Like, you know, what was it, you? Is it me? Like, I don't know. But the bottom line is like there was some force that interacted or interplayed on that deal that now is pushing it to a no decision. You know, so like, and we would look at that in the past saying, like, oh, they just defaulted to the status quo. Did they? You know, like I would ask the threshold question, and this is the bane of all marketers, I think. It's an attribution question and it's shared by sales. Attribution questions are super hard and they're getting harder these days, not easier, because you don't occupy the four walls where decisions are made in a buy cycle. You know what I'm saying? Like in a marketer's playbook, and a lot of my, I get into good debates with my CMO peers around this because there's a lot of us that came through the ranks that were very data driven and very numbers dependent. We want to attribute everything. Like we just want to put a dollar sign on like a single campaign that drove a lead that converted into a net one and call it an ROI. And the truth of the matter is like, it's way more loosey goosey than that. You know, like just even the unpacking the phrase dark social will give you rise to everything you can't attribute. You know, like anyone that listens to this podcast right now and is thinking takeaway, say we mention a tech tool or say we mention a service or a company, or even like someone listens to me and goes, oh, you know, he works for science. Sounded maybe smart or somewhat coherent. I'm going to check those guys out. How do I attribute that? Can't. Like, unless we're surveying after the fact, same exact thing happens in the sales cycle, right? So like, what were the forces that pushed that deal into like no man's land and forced it into kind of like purgatory? Don't know. Can't tell unless I have, you know, magic wand can tie a golden lariat of truth around like the people that I was interacting with that company for why the thing stalled out. Attribution is a serious hobgoblin in all of this. And it's so ill talked about, so little measured, and really so hard. That's the art part of our jobs.
You know, as you're talking, I'm sitting here and saying, and with the amount of overwhelm that exists currently today, I mean, all of us personally, we experience this, you know, even if we start talking about things that a trail that we went through on the internet, like, how did I get to this page? I don't remember, right? You know, I've got 10, 12 tabs up and I've got, you know, 300 emails that I haven't, you know, opened yet. And I don't know how I got here.
That's exactly right.
And I've had people do that in just very, what would seem to be like a very short period of time. Like, and I'll give you a quick story example. A client of mine was looking for a particular solution, and I had some, you know, connections in that particular realm. And so I actually had the conversations on their behalf and was an advocate because I knew about the business. I said, look, I'll just go ahead and take care of this for you. So I'm doing it as a value add, right?
Sure.
And so we even had a call that we scheduled, lasted about 30 minutes. That's it. But the timing wasn't right and things like that. And I told him it was initial stage and it was fine. However, not even 90 days later, 60 days later, they informed me, my client says, oh, well, we've been looking to move forward on that. I'm like, what? And I said, well, what about that client? What about that solution provider that I had talked to? And they're like, what was their name again?
I love it.
I'm like, oh. I mean, but that's, you know, you go through that experience. You're like, how could you not remember? We were even on a call, and it's not like it's, you know, totally different from what you were attempting to do. But I think that's just the reality of today. Everybody's just slap bombarded. And this is where I'm going with this is our thoughts and thinking around the science of brand recognition. I think that's out the window these days.
Or it's more relevant than ever. So I'm fond of saying that, and you used one of them, that every person, and so listeners, think about it in mental image of you as a prospect, right? So I would argue that everyone is susceptible to the three B's all day, every day in their working lives all the time. And those three B's are busy, bombarded, and bewildered, right? So we're overscheduled. I have yet to meet a desirable target, an executive, someone you would prospect into that doesn't have like a pretty damn full calendar. Like meeting after meeting, after initiative, after project, after whatever, right? Like, I think we can all agree that the busy part is just like, yeah. Bombarded is exactly what you said before. Most human beings are rifling through hundreds of web pages a day. They have, you know, 45 tabs open. They have an inbox that's full, a voicemail, you know, like... inbox that's also full and checking, you know, sporadically or whatever their system is. We're busy and we're bombarded. And then of course that leads to, I think, bewilderment, which is, hey, you ever tried to buy, like, let's just stick to SaaS software for a moment because it's so easy. My favorite way of demonstrating this is like, works at HubSpot now, but the MarTech 5000 was a site that was originally produced like 8 years ago with not even 5,000 marketing titles on it that any marketer could use for any, like, you know, hey, I want an ABM platform tool. Okay, great. Like, go to the MarTech 5000, check out that category. That number is up to like 9,000 right now. So if you were back to the buy cycle and back to fear of messing up, if you were a smart person that wanted to evaluate all their options, you could schedule meetings with every vendor in the category and be done sometime in 2030, right? So all of a sudden, buying is harder than selling, isn't it? Right? And that's bewildering. And so for those reasons, I think that is so present on kind of like today's stage. Now, let me get back to your question. Does that mean brand, another B word for that matter, is insignificant today? In fact, I would argue just the opposite. Brand typically is what we feel familiar about. And I'll give you a little story to illustrate this point. I remember when I was like, I want to say 8 or 9 years old. And I went to my mom and I said to her, Mom, I see so many ads for Coca-Cola. And yet, like, everyone drinks Coke and everyone knows what Coke is. Why do they need to advertise so much? And she stopped in an apparent moment. She turned to me. Maybe this is when my marketing career started. She answered a question with a question. She goes, "And how do you think everyone learned about Coca-Cola?" And all of a sudden my gears started turning. I was like, oh, it's this chicken and egg problem of brand reinforcement, where all of a sudden familiarity and the product, like, it hasn't changed since that time when I was a 9-year-old kid to now. Like, Coke's still the exact same. And yet there's a whole generation of buyers that have all been inculcated and exposed to arguably thousands, tens of thousands more media messages from that one brand.
Okay, that makes sense to us all, because, I mean, we've experienced and we know the global brand and the recognition piece. But let's go back to your example talking about the Marcon or marketing, you know, now 9,000 or 10,000.
Sure, yeah.
I'm not going to spend my way into brand awareness like a Coca-Cola when I am one company on that list. And, oh, hey, by the way, I'm not the one that has the multi-million dollar pockets.
Sure.
What do I do?
Well, I think that it's a slightly different equation, because Coke is B2C and they think that any human on the planet can access and use their product. B2B brands actually are in a much smaller TAM, relatively speaking, total addressable market. And so, you know, I would probably be a little bit challenging in saying that if I was the company and I had designs on growing and market share, at some point I am going to fundamentally attack that question. How do I build brand amongst my target audience, my list of buyers, always? You know, so, like, I think that as a startup, you can't really ask that question and functionally answer it, because you just don't have the resources. You don't have the level of investment. You don't have the juice to conquer your entire TAM at once. In fact, I think that would be a bad strategic mistake if you tried. That said, I think that in the life cycle of a company, you know, you better believe that companies that went from startup to now, like, stalwarts of, say, the B2B industry, I would throw out an example like Salesforce, right? Like, Salesforce is thinking about, how do I brand myself with every sales leader on the face of the planet, like, come hell or high water. And I don't have this on actual fact, because I'm not within their business or their company's four walls, but I can see through their actions that that is